gospel in prayer.
I have taken just a revised program in light of us not being able to deal with other issues that relate to what was on our program. It's on the adjustment of parliamentary program. During the chairperson's meeting, I have raised the concerns of inconsistencies with the program because it affects our work. So we moved things backwards. I know on the machine the preparation to ask what happened to the discussion of DTT. We had to move each section of meeting backwards. So the DTT now will come into the first committee meetings that we have at the beginning of next year. So all members understand because already others had prepared their presentation and had to already done extensive work. So we could not give them the just having those that we have already started engaging with them in preparation of their work. Today there was has to come to it it's the issue of, or maybe let me just get, unless you remember, I hope we are in agreement in terms of the explanation of the amendment of the program, because it has to come whatever we do as amendments so that we are able to get rid of that. Now, with regards to today's members, we are going to deal with a prism of support where you know that we're supposed to deliver a number of things, the issue of corporatization and other things around support. But when looking at the adjustment, and we just felt that one thing that can postpone, because we requested to postpone meetings as chairperson. One thing we felt, or I felt that I can't postpone, is the discussion around the state of our first minister in terms of where support is. And this is informed particularly by the inquiry myself together with other members who are serving this committee are receiving from the public, the media reports that we are seeing, and obviously your statements, and we just felt that it's important for us to have this conversation. And this conversation is simple. It's to understand the current state of SAPO, where it is. We already have seen, either you confirm or disagree with what they are reading in the newspapers, but the fact that SAPO has not tabled its annual report and its finances says to us there's a problem. And we want to understand why that has not happened, what are the issues, the difficulties, and how are we getting out of them. And I'm saying this because SAPO has to play a critical role in terms of giving services to a South African community. SAPO is one tool that needs to assist us to be able to achieve our objectives of servicing our community. There's mandates that are given to SAPO, and if SAPO does not attend to that, and Minister was subjected to questions I reported in the House around the SAPO strike and its finances, just to say, there are people who are dependent on SAPO, for example, if delivery does not happen of post, if delivery of books does not happen, if delivery of medication does not happen, delivery of equipment for small businesses, it affects everybody. So it's in the public interest, it's in the best interest of our market to really understand what has happened. And how we are going to approach this, I'm going to allow the minister to make remarks at the beginning. Just a few introductions. No reason. Immediately after that, the minister would make remarks, then would allow the remarks by the chairperson, and I'm not sure who will be in the presentation. And then the chairperson would make the remarks and then the presentation. The presentation together with the remarks of the chairperson, oh my goodness, the presentation together with the remarks of the chairperson, I'm in the chair 15 minutes. I would want to have extensive engagements, and those who've been here know SAPO has appeared before the committee, knows our approach. We would want to have extensive engagement with us where the crux of the issue is. We've seen your presentation, we've seen this in advance, we've read it. We already have our questions, and I say it every time. We would want you to respond to those questions that we have on behalf of South Africans. That's what I want to apply as the process of this meeting. Those who do not know me, my name is Maonu Kokubai, known as Kenani. I'm the chairperson of this committee. telecommunications and postal services. I'll start with member states and then come Minister will lead that part.
Judy Kinnan, I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Mary Alicia.
I'm Karen McKenzie, member of the committee.
I'm Siawan Ekwe, a member of parliament, the boy is a minister.
And I'm not second from the challenge.
I am Salalan Nanjini, acting translation of South Africa Post Office.
Sati Tandon, Chief Board Committee and member of the board, South Africa.
Kumam Rojayana, CFO for the Post Office.
Shreya Patel, Non-Executive Director, Post Office.
And Musita, the President of the South African Post Office and Allied Workers Union, South Africa.
Clive Levin, the President of Communication Workers Union.
South Africa, I say Post Office.
Right. When you say Post Office, you explain what you are doing in the same Post Office.
I'm responsible for government and parliamentary relations.
Good morning, sir. My name is Therese Sabine Leclerc. I'm Group Executive of Public Affairs, South African Post Office.
My name is John Zaha. I'm from the Ministry of Communication.
This is all managers, senior legal advisor to the minister.
Morning, chairman. Morning, committee members. My name is Priya Kosa. I'm spokesperson to the minister.
Renee
Gavanga,
Department of Telecommunications and Infrastructure.
Thank you very much.
From the Ministry of Telecommunications.
Good morning, I'm Shishan Maharaj. I'm the acting group leader for Human Rights Management at the South African Post Office.
Good morning, my name is Chris Watt. I'm the acting group executive of Mail Business at the Post Office.
Good morning, my name is Tintu Mukwena, the spokesperson of Democratic and Postal Communications Union, Department.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Andrew Nongo. I'm the General Manager for Public Affairs and South African Post Office.
Okay. I think that people do not interest in South African Post Office. What the committee and why they are not, they're not using traditional themselves from youth. They do the background, but they don't want to know. So that's why the gentleman is looking somewhere they're not talking. So we have to jump in. It's part of the team.
The two representatives from the union, do they also sit on the board of the South African Post Office?
There are three union members. Let's leave them. They're here. The board chairperson will explain the presentation.
Honourable members of the committee, leaders of the South African Post Office, that I acting chairperson of the leaders of the organized unions, three organized and recognized unions in the Post Office, TWU, led by President Clive Mendon. Led by President M. Shole, and the ARCU led by Mr. Gwen. DGM officials, good morning all. Chair, we welcome the opportunity to talk to you as honorable members of the parliament about the challenges faced by our state company, the South African Post Office.
that's a very important, you know, effort the nation to achieve social inclusion and a fair financial services to all, especially poor, who live in the marginalized area and our rural areas. With this network of 2,497 outlets, some of which are in the most part of our country, the post office has an extensive and bankable logistical infrastructure. Before we get to the promise of the future where the South African post office helps us to deliver a more inclusive society, we need to navigate the challenging times which are faced by this company. From the onset, I'd like to say that these problems are not new, Chairperson. As we have seen in the handover report by the previous committee, there have been a chronic problem in the course of it. Some of them have led to the speculation of other administrations, that's why we have the SIU investigation which we briefly briefed you in the last time we had the committee. We honestly hope that the SIU wants to show this as well to help us to deal with some of the three challenges which are faced by the post office. There is also challenges in terms of leadership, the frequent change of leadership, and management, and also cause some problems, and some of which will come back as we in our inputs today. And the next group of challenges is the labor instability. For many years, but they seem to have been exacerbated since 2011, where we have been having this constant ongoing labor challenges. In short, the labor challenges is not really a symbol of violent challenges at the post office. These challenges have an impact on the sustainability of the post office. If we take the current industrial relation, today the SWAPO will present to you about the current labor action, which is unprotected, and some of the reasons for it. Unfortunately, some of the industrial actions are violent and often accompanied by serious intimidation cases. As we have said before, most of the industrial actions stem from the labor voting system that was part and parcel of the operations of the Southern Development Post Office. I'd like to reiterate that it is decision to do away with the labor broker system at the Alaskan Post Office remain correct and sound. The agreement to end the labor broking provides for the elimination of the middlemen in the employment environment at Post Office. It also provides for when the company's financials allow for the gradual absorption of these workers. In short, I said, the original agreement was to directly contract these workers instead of having the middlemen in the same terms and conditions. So that whatever commissions which were paid to the paper brokers then go directly to the workers, because these are critical workers for the post office. As I said before, the implementation of the agreement was weak, and it was also associated with the non-functional, that is, the foreign or formal labor system in the post office became non-functional. This has led to some recognition of the workers and multiple agreements that were signed by different representatives of organized workers. This is at the heart of multiple industrial action we've witnessed since 2011. It is for this reason that we called for re-establishment of the former labor communication channel at the South African Post Office. On the 20th of October this year, we facilitated a summit that resolved to create this leadership forum to jointly deal with labor issues and sustainability issues. We see this forum as significant, as it signifies finding a return of being right in the right way in the post office. All the leaders of organized labor have now a platform to engage with management. And we really like to appreciate the work and the effort of the labor forums and engagement forums. In our engagement with the stakeholders, both individually and collectively, we have identified ways to make the post office sustainable and more efficient. These, for instance, include looking at the structure and the way the post office does its business, including looking at the headcount themselves, starting from the management level and working together to keep the existing clients of the post office. I'd like to say in that meeting, all the stakeholders committed themselves that they work together to approach major clients and ensure that they don't continue to lose clients while we are still addressing the labor issues. We also welcome the cooperation of some key customers such as the University of South Africa and UNISA, who have allowed the authorities to implement contingency plans to deliver the study material to our students. The presence of the leadership of all unions that are organizing their processes today here today is a testimony to the progress we are making in normalizing the labor environment at the post office. It is an important and necessary step towards achieving long-term stability at the post office that will enable it to deliver uninterrupted services for a long time. Jefferson, during his medium-term budget policy statement speech last week, Minister of Finance, Honorable Karanene, said that the South African Post Office and other state-owned companies will be restructured to address financial risks and improve governance. We are in regular contact with colleagues in finance and have agreed on a framework to work on a framework of work that needs to be done. We encourage the leaders of the post office to work with workers to contribute to this restructuring. Whenever we talk about the turnaround, we want a sustainable turnaround. A turnaround which will have the buy-in of all the stakeholders, the workers, the management, and so on. We also want a turnaround which will ensure that we are able to achieve this social compact between government, business, and labor in the interest of citizens. We firmly believe that we can achieve this working together. Chairperson, we have raised the issue of the delay in the submission of the annual report of the South African Post Office. We are working hard to ensure that the outstanding issues which are holding finalization of the report together with the auditors are addressed. And we will revert back to the committee as soon as we address those issues. We honestly apologize for the delay of this council. Some of the challenges are around the finances, not just labor issues. And we are engaging, currently engaging with the board and getting them to account for this effort. I am still considering their responses, which will guide us then what actions need to be taken once we face the consideration of those responses. I'd like also to say that within the department there is process of policy review, or ICT policy review, which includes the board office. And we hope that we'll be soon we'll be directing this and allowing the party to comment. And some of the challenges are structural and we're working very closely with the regulators in the past. Who kindly joined the summit we held on the 2nd of October. And they made commitments that they work together with all the stakeholders to assist the post office to reach sustainability and deliver the services. Some of the challenges really is about service obligations. Which are linked to the contracts for operating as a post office. And as you know, the department would like these obligations to continue but in a sustainable manner. We know without these obligations, we are not going to have others in the rural areas. But as we said in the House a few days ago, that the challenge is the cost of delivering the services. So the current model, operation model, is not helping us to deal with the cost issues. So the restructuring must look into that, because if you spend 2,900, the ordinary have a 900, just using the frame from the operations, then we'll continue to lose the money in the cash value. As we have said in the house, some of the challenges is the cost structure. Like we are saying, if you continue to increase your prices to be below inflation, sooner or later you end up in problems because the cost go up and the prices are going below the cost. But we understand the post office is giving the services to the most vulnerable. As you know, there was a removal of subsidy 3 years ago. But that removal of subsidy was not covered. The post office was expected to prepare for it. There were one over years. But that also has had an impact on the way we operate. As we said, there are several measures we as government were looking at how to help the post office to be more sustainable. President Zuma has said that because of the reach of the post office, reaching many of our areas, that's why we're talking about the post bank. I know we're not discussing the post bank today. As a mechanism to increase financial services to the unbanked and poor and increase the cultural savings, and to help the small businesses who are living in those areas. Chair President, 2 days ago, I also said, if we as government can just increase our business, our Korean business, just by 20%, giving 20% of our share of business to telco, we'll resolve most of the problems facing for the African and post office. And we want the post office to be the center of access of government services in the poor and for all the areas of our nation. So I thought I should just give that background to say we really appreciate this opportunity.
Parliament has created today to afford the Port Office an avenue to find ways of achieving long-term labor peace and sustainability in our somebody said I said telephone. I'm talking about South African problems, so I apologize. Of course, we'll expect all state companies to work with Telkom, including Telkom, in ensuring that as we modernize the way we do business, we change, because we make volumes will continue to decrease, is how we modernize and have e-services through the post office. And you can imagine if we can make each and every post office a coil of presence for the broadband. That will change the landscape of the activities, especially in the rural areas, in terms of access to modern ways of doing things and the broadband and ICT. I thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Minister, for giving a comprehensive background on the post office situation. I will not attempt to go back to the issues you have made, but just to add that as we face the challenges of the post office, discussed by the Minister, as a board, and as resources in general, we have to make sure that we come up with a comprehensive strategy to respond to the current environment, particularly an environment where this is the first year in the post office when the strategy is completely cut, although it has been reduced gradually. This is the first year where we have got a zero assistance from government. The strategic turnaround plan which we have is meant to address the issue of sustainability moving forward without government subsidies. But as a board, we have to make sure that we create an environment within post office to be able to carry out that strategic turnaround plan. And in this regard, what was very crucial was to put in the policy base. In other words, we had to go through all the various policies of the institution to review and make sure that there is alignment with this particular change. And we can mention here that, for instance, our supply chain management dashboard has been reviewed in order to link up with the treasury regulations. We had to make sure that the warm bodies in the South African Post Office are there to be able to carry out the turnaround. And in this regard, we have also reviewed the HR policy. What is meaning is to make a consultation with our labor unions to be able to agree on how we move forward in terms of implementation of that. And we also had to look at what is that we have as post office that can form a base of turning the post office around. We have got a portfolio profile which we're also looking at, and we're also looking at the modernization of our postal system as an e-business. So those were the things which we were looking at in order to augment what the Minister has said. But it is important, Chairperson, to say our leadership within the union were invited to meet us today, at least to understand the environment upon which we have to take the post office forward as we interact with ourselves, so that when we go out and we understand that as representatives of the communities, these are the things which are coming from the communities about our organization, and together as a team, when we move out of this interaction, we will be able to take the process forward, taking in the cognizance the inputs which we are getting from the portfolio committee moving forward. And therefore, Chairperson, I would like to indicate to ourselves that we do have a plan to take the process forward. The plan requires the cooperation of both ourselves as a board, the workers and the stakeholders. And lastly, I just want to acknowledge and appreciate the support of course of the department and the minister in particular to be able to go over the process. Now, Chairperson, we'll go on to present our status, our challenges, and how we intend taking the process towards completion. And I will ask Mr. Mungo to take us through, and later on the FO to talk to the financial, particularly the implications, financial implications on the other matters which we have had. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Minister, Chairperson of the Board. First, I'd like to extend an apology on behalf of the acting CEO. He would ordinarily have been here to make this presentation, but unfortunately he can't fly because he has an old clot in his leg, so he's not able to do that. But I'd also like to express my appreciation for the Minister's remarks, because in fact he has traversed quite a bit of the ground that I intended to come during this presentation. And taking into cognizance what you said about the time limitation, I've taken the liberty to reduce the slide somewhat. Therefore, I'll start, and as I see the slides, I will indicate to members which slide I'm currently on. So I'd like to start with the introduction, which is in fact slide number one. And the reality is that what the post office is facing is that since 2008 in particular, we have faced extremely challenging economic and trading conditions. The economic meltdown, as it's commonly known, had a particularly adverse impact on the South African post office. And as a result, you start to see that we're having challenges with expenses continuing to constitute revenue as clients either choose not to use the post office as a first measure of cutting costs and moving on to other alternative methods of conveying their mail. And at the same time, of course, we have fixed costs that we continue to deal with. The question of capital requirements, I think it is common voice, even through what the Minister was saying, that part of what has happened over the last years is the inability of the South African Post Office to invest in infrastructure in a manner that would allow you to compete comprehensively with competitors out there, whether it be courier, whether it be financial services. But clearly, this type of investment has had an adverse impact on the South African Post Office. We have USO funding charges, and I think the important thing here we need to reiterate is that the USO itself is not the challenge. The challenge is the funding. How do we fund this particular USO? The Minister has alluded to the fact that, in fact, there is a national ICT policy review going on. And part of the discussions in that policy review are in fact to talk about what are the ideal funding conditions or models that could be applied to the South African Post Office. I will move on. Slide number five. What has since transpired is that, particularly as has been pointed out since 2011, around 2012, once the decision had been taken that the South African Post Office was going to sever relations with temporary employment service providers, colloquially known as labor brokers, we then began to see the situation where once we had brought in the casuals then that were employed by these debt brokers into the fold of the South African Post Office, it presented dynamics that at that point I think we had not anticipated. For example, to what extent can we financially, that is, be able to absorb, at that point there were just about under 8,000 employees that needed to be absorbed. Now the question was, how quickly can we absorb these employees? Will the balance sheet, or rather the financials of the post office be able to sustain that absorption and at what pace? And it's part of these things that started to reverberate in the post office, and therefore various industrial actions ensued. As workers clearly were asking for equal work, equal labor, equal work, for example, the types of benefits that would be due to them, etc. And consequently, what has since transpired is that although the bargaining chamber of the post office was still functional, as the minister has pointed out, some of the consultation forums within below the bargaining chamber had long ceased to be functional. So the platforms within which to try and address some of these issues clearly were lacking at that point. It was not helpful also that when we absorbed the casuals, if you recall, at that point we only had two recognized unions. And at that point, none of the unions was technically representing the casuals. So obviously the casuals then felt incumbent upon themselves to agitate on their own behalf. And we have the consequences of that as we go forward. However, the South African Post Office has laid out a couple of options, and you can see them in slide number 5, where there's an attempt to suggest what it would take if, for example, were to convert all employees into permanent full-time employees with full benefits over an extended period of time. So you have option 1, 2, and 3 that talk for 3 years, 4 years, and over the current year. And that will give you an indication of the sort of finances we are facing there. I'm now going over to slide number 9, members. There's been a reflection in respect of the leadership challenges at SAPO. I think you would have heard when people were introducing themselves, and a lot of them introduced themselves as active. And this has been a fairly recurrent problem within the South African Post Office. And part of what we are looking at now is, as Minister has already pointed out, headcount, right-sizing, at management level, who do we need? What are the requisite skills that are required to drive a new strategy going forward? I will pause there and just allow the CFO, the President, just to speak very briefly the next few slides about the numbers involved. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. If we just look at our half-year performance, as far as the numbers are concerned, starting off with our revenue, for the financial year, we have posted revenue of 2.4.
You're talking about this financial year?
We are talking to the 2014-15 financial year, half-year performance. And then, if we look at how we have performed as far as revenue is concerned, we sit at 2.7 billion year to date. And when we compare that to how we performed in the previous financial year, at the same time, we were sitting at 2.8 billion. So when you compare year on year, we have dropped 3% as far as revenue is concerned, which translates to 79.7 million then. And when we look at what we have budgeted for the current financial year, we have budgeted for a 3.1 billion rand in revenue. And so the variance between what we budgeted for and what we have actually, how we have actually performed, we sit at below budget by 13%, which translates to 429 million rand. As far as expenses are concerned, when you compare expenses to the budget, we have managed to keep expenses below budget by 6%, which translates to 213 million rand. And when compared to the previous financial year this time, we are up on our expenses by 5%, which translates to 154 million rand. And that gives us an operating loss of 500 million for the current financial year. And when you compare to the previous financial year, we are down by 233.8 million. And compared to budget, that's the 215 million rand that we have spoken to. And if we go further down to our net profit when you take other non-operating items, then comes down to 538 million rand in losses. And if you go to the next slide, Chair, this slide attempts to show you how we have fared historically and comparing year and year and actually ending up with how we performed in the year 2013-14. And I think without just going into the detail, if we can just look at the net operating profit after tax, or rather if we can look above the line and look at the net operating profit before the subsidy and how we have fared year on year. If we have gone back to history and looked at from the year 2007-2008 how we have fared, and when we look at that year, before the subsidy, The post office posted a profit of 488.8 million rand. Then in 2008-2009, the profit declined and post a profit of 380.4 million rand. And when you look at the 2009-2010, we then post a profit of 253. So you can see a steady decline coming over time. And when you look at the 2011 financial year, we actually start posting losses before the subsidy of 55 million rand. And if, when you look at 2011-12, we post a loss of 19 million, and in the 2013 financial year, we post a loss of 440 million rand. And when you look at the 2013-14 financial year, we post a loss of 500 million. And if you look at then what is the position after the subsidy over a period of time, you then see in 2007-2008 that we posted a profit rather of 564 million, and in 2008-2009 we posted a profit of 490, and that is inclusive of the subsidy. And in 2010 we posted a profit of 371. In 2011, we then post a profit of 195 million when taken into account the subsidy. And in 2012, we post a profit of 222. So we actually move from a loss-making position to a profit-making position simply because of the subsidy. And as subsidy declines over time, the true losses are then realized as the South African Post Office. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, CFO. I think the broad indication here, members and chairpersons, is that the expenses of the South African Post Office over the last 5 or so years have now consistently outstripped conservativeness. And I think this is what Master Minister was alluding to, that we now need to understand, for example, our cost base, the costing in terms of CPI of our products, in relation to the actual cost of those products, if we are to find we want significantly going forward. The chairperson also mentioned, I'm on slide number 15 now, that there were efforts, and efforts are continuing, to significantly show progress in the procurement side of the shop business. You will be aware, I was perhaps in Parliament 2 weeks ago, when we were asked to come to the Select Committee to talk about the regulation and the NHS. And really what this amounted to was instances of contracts which were properly entered into but which either did not have an end date, or contracts which were properly entered into but when the end date came about continued as if they had not ended, etc. And to that end, there's been efforts to try and regularize those contracts, and at this point, as the indication there, we are down to about 95 million that's still to be regularized. But in effect, there has been compensation at the supply chain management of South Post Office precisely to try to do this, to quickly regularize those contracts, but secondly, to put together a framework that ensures that as we go forward, we do not have a repetition of any of these matters. I thought I'll just put that out very quickly. This is an indication of some of the challenges we are currently facing. When you hear that workers are unable to go to work, etc., as the Minister already alluded, there is serious violence, there is serious intimidation. So we have in many cases workers wanting to come to work, but they are faced with these sort of situations and unable to do so. And again, I can only but reiterate the call, and we have done so with most of the unions, that we need to stop the violence, we need to get the workers back to work. This is slide number 18, and what we've attempted to do here is to give you an estimation of what the cost is fighting, sorry, what the strike is costing us at this point in time. And this is, as of a couple of weeks ago, we still have not come to the final numbers in respect of these numbers. But as you can see, these are significant amounts that the Post Office cannot, at this juncture, afford to have. We should be at a position right now where we are normalizing operations to try and recover as quickly as we can. Instead, we are in fact suffering these losses due to the industrial action that is currently on. As for what we intend to do post-strike, I think the bullet points and slide number 19 I really want to focus on is the one in relation to the mail backlog. The issue there is we have a mountain of mail that is undelivered that is now quite substantial. We will have to work overtime, but the first thing is to first stabilize the situation. We have to stabilize and ensure that workers are actually at work so that we can immediately begin to talk about how quickly we can resolve or rather remove the backlog. And this would involve working overtime, this would involve working over weekends, this would involve even bringing in normally head office staff to come in and assist at various mail centers so that we ensure that the public is not more adversely impacted than it has already happened. And to this end, we will have to prioritize the mail that was first in must go out as quickly as possible, increase the capacity for transportation, rotational delivery of mail, and try to ensure that at a call center point, adequate call center managers are available or assistants are available to deal with customer inquiries so that their mail can reach them as quickly as possible. In terms of external challenges, I won't dwell too much on this. Minister has already sort of covered this area. But the reality is that, yes, we do have an obligation, what is called a universal service obligation. And as I've already indicated, the issue around here is about funding, it's not about the obligation itself. And clearly we have a situation where, from a policy perspective, we need to make a determination about what are funding options that will be able to be sustainable for the post office going forward. The fact that we have to have post offices in areas that clearly from a revenue point of view are not sustainable is part of that USO, but we have to innovative about how we sustain that, whether it is by getting more government business or how the minister has alluded by ensuring that the post office becomes the touch point of most government services that might be part of the solution. But this is what we currently facing at the moment. I'm on slide number 23 now, and this was just to indicate the drop in revenues, decline in revenues as we experienced over the last couple of years. Even as we speak today, the mail business in the South African Post Office still constitutes 65% of the total revenues of the South African Post Office. So any drop in mail is a significant drop in the South African Post Office. And as we continue to go forward, this really becomes a huge challenge. How do we replace this lost revenue as we go forward? And we'll talk some of the issues around the e-space, about how do we replace this lost revenue from mail. There's some reputational risk, and I think members of the committee, the chairperson, you'll be aware that certainly the newspaper reports about the current challenges that we are facing, the impact of the strike, and these are some of the reputational risks and public perception that we've done. Clearly the perception that the organization is in perpetual crisis, that in fact there are poor labor relations at the South African Post Office, all of these things, I think, as the minister alluded to, the leadership forum that is currently constituted, together with the board, together with management, are working very hard to try and ensure that we rise this particular perception so that we bring ourselves back to where we would like to be as the South African Post Office. In terms of what we see as the future going forward, the Chairperson has already alluded to the fact that there's a turnaround plan that has been envisaged. And the bulk of this plan involves innovation. Involves us trying to do things slightly differently because the context and environment we are operating in is clearly different from what the situation may have been, say, 10, 15 years ago. And I will quickly go over to the next slide, slide 29, which talks to the objectives. I think it's clearly indicating the key element of this strategy. So we have to deal with addressing, for example, working capital management. And this is ensuring that we collect the money that is due to us far quicker than the money that we have to pay out to other customers, just paying out in there. But secondly, we have to stabilize the foundation, and that's the workforce. And part of what the leadership forum is tasked to do, or seized with doing, is ensuring that we stabilize the work environment. Currently, it has two very specific objectives. The first is to try and bring the strike or the industrial action to an end and bring workers back to work. But secondly, it is tasked with ensuring that the issues that have been raised as those causing the industrial action and the labor relations issues are dealt with comprehensively in such a manner that we have one global agreement in the South African Post Office that is recognized by all stakeholders and will allow us to stabilize the workforce for the foreseeable future. Secondly, it is revenue and profit improvement. And I think this is important. We have to find means of increasing the revenue, either by the current products that we have, by right costing them if necessary, or we have to find efficiencies in how we do our businesses in South African Post Office. Fourthly is cost management, which is something that we have been aggressively chasing over the last 2 or 3 years. We have to reduce the cost of the South African Post Office. As I've already alluded and the CFO has indicated, consistently over the last 4 or 5 years, we have had a situation where costs are increasingly outstripping the revenue of the South African Post Office, and that needs to be managed. Also, we need to do with improved service delivery. The experience that our customers receive and the experience of the South African outlet, South African Post Office outlet, is crucial. Because if that experience is a good experience, then it will drive feed into the South African Post Office, and we can begin to on-sell various other products to the market. But I think it is important that we improve public perception about the South African Post Office. And this can only be done by improving the service delivery side of the South African Post Office, regardless of where the outlet is, particularly if the outlet is in rural areas. It has to be seen as being relevant and serving the people in the manner in which they expect to serve. Some of the key dependencies, therefore, and challenges in respect to the strategic general plan, and I alluded to some of this already, we need to stabilize the workforce and reduce industrial actions. We need to ensure that we have conducive labor relations within the South African Post Office that will allow for long-term stability in the organization. Clearly, we need adequate capital funding, and I've already alluded. There's been a good deal over the last 5 years of non-investment in infrastructure in the South African Post Office, and unfortunately, that non-investment is beginning to catch up with us, with outdated and antiquated systems that we now need to improve on. And this will include, of course, IT infrastructure. I've indicated already that there are various efforts being made to improve procurement governance, and of course, actually, to improve the agility to respond to the environment, we need to have decision-making and strategic execution capability. That is quite important. Some of the revenue pipeline and growth initiatives, we thought we would just highlight to you. One of the things we have been consistently pushing, for example, is things like motor vehicle licenses. We do have quite a few areas where this is already ongoing, areas like the 44 Northwest, Eastern Cape, but we'd like to include some other elements into this. You should be able to, for example, buy your bus tickets, airline tickets, etc. from the South African Post Office at the outlet. We're looking at e-business. So where we have clients that would rather use email, we would like to be still the same source of conveyance on their behalf. And this we are doing in something that we call hybrid later in South African Post Office. From a logistics point of view, we see logistics as a growth business for South African Post Office. Not just in terms of, for example, with the DPT projects, in terms of distributing warehouse and set of boxes, but we see this in, for example, in Limpopo, we were able to move books this last financial year, including warehousing and distribution. We would like to do the same thing, for example, for the Department of Health, in terms of moving critical pharmaceuticals. We think we still have the capability to do this for home affairs. So, in our view, as the Minister has already alluded, a conservative increase of between 15-25% of government business with the South African Post Office will go a long way to actually putting the business on a sustainable plane. Some of the things that have been done so far I've alluded to, but some of the things I will highlight in this particular slide, which involves, for example, the implementation of a financial misconduct committee so that we ensure that issues of regular expenditure, for example, are contained at the earliest possible moment, that fruitless and wasteful expenditure is in fact not just curtailed but totally eradicated. Some of the things we've done is we've eradicated the labor brokers and absorbed the workforce directly into the South African Post Office. We are looking at new motor vehicle pilot sites. In our view, I think we certainly have the capability to roll a motor vehicle across the whole nation, and I think this is something that we think we can do successfully.
In summary, some of the things that we're currently doing now as part of normalizing our situation and trying to sustain a plan is the continuous engagement with employees and stakeholders on the question of the strike resolution. And this is happening under the aegis and auspices of what is being termed the leadership forum. We are going to communicate and we have been communicating and will continue to communicate with key customers and suppliers to try and assure them that once we get over this particular hurdle, we will be able to render the type of service that they would ordinarily expect from us as far as the post office. We have mobilized resources to create what we call the project management office to ensure that those projects that are critical to the survival of the post office are rendered as quickly as possible within the post office. We continue to communicate with all relevant stakeholders and of course continue to be in discussion and engagement with the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services as well as National Treasury about how we can best move forward and create a proper framework that will allow the post office to be sustainable going into the future. And let me pause right there, Chairperson. I think we have the presentation there and we will await questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Just before I open for the members to speak, I have a problem when an entity appears before us and they are not auditing us or they selectively inform us. None of them in the presentation have made notice or information about the non-paid staff members list. Or is it because you feel that it's not important for us to know? I received a call immediately arrived in the office this morning, security. The first call I received was an employee of post office. A child of my house was being paid because their salary is supposed to be running through. And you are appearing before us, you don't even have the decency to tell us that. You can't start that way. It's just a wrong start. Wrong to get all complete. And the reason I started my opening remarks, we are representatives here representing people. If you're not going to tell us what is happening, we are asking what is happening in South African post office. This thing I was talking about, there are people out there, they are feeding families. They are not being paid today. It's a pity. When my day of being paid runs, I gave it a ghost in. I school fees to pay. My family expects me to come back with concern. You are appearing before us today. You can't even have the decency to explain that you have not paid workers today. You don't even brief us where the CEO is. It's not important for us. Because somebody spoke about it to you. I don't know where the CEO is. That's just the wrong start of engagement. Because it removes the trust. You just start wondering whether what else in this presentation is true and is not true. That's just wrong footing at all. Unless if you don't understand why you are here, you don't understand the role that is played by Parliament, why are you here? Because you talked to ACP. You came here because this letter is important. And I make the remarks when I open it, but it's because we are sitting here, we are representing people of South Africa. Members who are sitting here, as I said, we are indicted by courts, we are out there. There are emails that are coming through, SMS, everything that comes through about South African post office. And we felt that let's give you an opportunity to speak to us so that we can understand what is happening. I even said to you, when you speak, there are media reports about issues, we are waiting to hear whether these media reports are true or not. You are evasive in your presentation. I want us to have a frank discussion in order to assist. Post office has to survive. There needs to be a frank discussion of the state of the post office of South Africa. Let me just explanation of this one. Why has workers not been paid yet?
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to hear the apologies for the omission in that regard.
we have started paying the workers, but we started very late. The reason being of the financial challenges which we had, we're in interaction with the bank itself. And that agreement came in very late after we should have started with the salaries. But at the end of the day, we managed to end the discussions and we started paying, and we will be finishing by the end of the day today. Chairperson, we are working on our financial, without the financial basis we have, where we are today, that is the reason why we could not manage to pay on time. But we are working on the issues. As I indicated, the discussion with the bank ended up very late, and by that time we ended the discussion with the bank, and we would have started paying, but immediately thereafter we started running the funds.
When is the discussion with the bank start?
We started, let me go back to that, but this one is difficult to do. I'll ask the CFO to give the dates as it went and what happened on each date until yesterday's agreement.
Thank you, Chen. Our engagement with the bank, particularly on this current month, started at Fabec at the 17th of October with the initial email that we got from the bank, and subsequently we then discussed and held meetings the next Monday with the bank, and we then progressed through those with those meetings to find an amicable way of resolving the matter. Also bearing in mind that given our current labor unrest, the inflows are not as what have always been. So there have been major challenges as far as inflows are concerned. So those arrangements have been going on. We have had numerous discussions with the bank starting from the 17th of October, and they have been engaging with us consistently. So, yesterday, as a matter of fact. So there has been continuous discussions and engagement with the bank to ensure that we are able to honor all of our commitments. And yes, the current glitch was simply because this latest payment that we had to go, discussions ended extremely late, and credentials then were finally released by the bank. Thank you.
Minister, were you aware of this? And when were you aware?
Thank you, Chairperson. No, I thought I'll come back because on this matter. Yesterday I had a meeting with the board members, consulted also with the challenges and the official resources. I was told in short notice that the employees are not going to be paid. Maybe since you have to do the paper, we had a similar problem in last month. As you know, in terms of the law, if we have to assist the post office from one side, I must get the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. We went then with the model officials and until we wrote them better of comfort to give some guarantee for the bank to continue the process the payments that month. One was not clear when we engaged yesterday, because we are giving now another letter, so we need another letter of higher guarantee at the bank. That was a letter of guarantee. And from our side, that will continue the process. Then we advise the board, let's go back to the bank, engage the senior leadership of the bank while our processing will be other things. Because as far as we're concerned, that was a letter of guarantee. It's a file by me and filed by the Minister of Finance. As the CFO is saying, it looked like the bank was just looking at the climate, current climate. Whether even with a guarantee should they recall or there'll be flows, because as you know, the money doesn't come at the same time. It goes like this. So I think that's what they are solving. But on the larger scale, because all these things they are also linked to what they call some farming injections that are needed for the post office. And for us to do that, particularly the current financial climate, we normally require a detailed information that the money will be growing there will not be going on the most handless tilt. And it will help to turn around things. That's why we've been employing our own officials. I think our officials and the National Treasury will be spending time with the officials of the post office to come and present a workable turnaround. You will remember when we met you in July, August, we said we set the turnaround strategy which we all have been assessed. Because the turnaround strategy was budgeting for a loss. And in government, we don't budget for a loss. So they've been working, and now they've got what we think may be a workable turnaround. And we're still assessing the turnaround and improving it before we finally approve it. I think those are some of the measures we're looking at. Of course, from the government side, that's why we've been in touch with the Minister of Finance yesterday to say we cannot allow a situation where people avoid another case. We immediately last night discussed my DG and the DG of Finance to meet this morning and find way of giving us an advice on how to quickly resolve the matter. At the same time, we sent the post office to go speak to their banks, because one of the problems we informed the banks was not that there was no money. They wanted to freeze the account until they had some comfort and trust that the bank operations will think that they are money. So that's what it's a cash flow problem which they're facing. As I said, Chairperson, unfortunately, some of our business seem to come back. Last month, when we issued that level of guarantee to increase the overdraft for them to continue the operations while we're dealing with bigger problems, we did say to them they must put up a plan and which will have to be monitored. They did produce the plan, we gave them a deadline of the 7th of October. And we were expecting a report by the end of October, which is today, of how they are actually making sure that the plan they promised us is actually working. So that's the situation I think. Thank you very much.
Questions from members? Honorable Sotesi, Honorable Claire, Honorable Marie, Honorable McKenzie, Honorable Dominique, the last one.
Mr. Chairperson, we do welcome the presentation. How would...
The issue of the CEO has a certain voice to this thing, because we can't ask people to think it's a short window.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honorable Minister. Our CEO, Mr. Bekani, has been put on excellently while we are looking at the allegations which are sitting in the board against him. And in his place, we have got Mr. Mlungisi Mathosi, who is acting, but most unfortunately is on ship because he is not taking him, and our official apology for not taking him in that way. Mr. Sakane is on page. It's on extended page, please. What's your question? What is extended? What is extended? It's when somebody is not at work while we're investigating the issue, the allegations are issued. When was that? Has it been charged? The charges are being finalized now. And it started on the 3rd of October.
Thank you, Chair President. I would like to thank the following challenges. But I think, in example, we have a risk management team. Also, the people which are on property management
and early anticipate potential risk or damage. Then I find that mine to care whether it is in mind or damage. Can we get maybe from ourselves, you know, information convincing that we have corporate independence for this responsibility? And with the size of damage in case, for example, how will this take into account the strategy? Coming to labor agreement, workers came through the agreement. Do you pay them directly or via labor agreement? And what are the actual conditions for engaging the labor agreement? And was that negotiated with trade unions? That's when there's one trauma counseling of employees. Are you going to do that in-house, like EAP within your HR, or are you going to assess the service of someone outside example? And which one would be cost effective between the two, or social or unit service in-house? For now, Chair.
Honorable Peter. Chairperson, I want to start by just speaking about accountability. And from my reading of the first office set and the amendments that were put through in 2011-2012, it is clear that the SI board is the accounting authority. Now, the PFMA regulates what accountability means. If I read the Act, the board must give effect to a plan and it gives decisions on effective decisions on behalf of the first office, and the board gives direction to the CEO. Now, if you are saying you are currently to have placed in for extended leave, whatever, you have taken him out whilst the charges are being formulated. Clearly you have to explain further, because usually in labour law things work differently. But I want to come to the issue of page 15, where the presentation clearly illustrates that there were irregular contacts. Page 15 talks of a decline. Historical 2.1 billion to 95 million in the current year. Now, if we hear that those who are in a contract, some of them were signed without an end date or whatever, the issue is, who is responsible? The buck must stop somewhere. Where are the systems in place? The buck must stop somewhere, and there must be consequences for those responsible. Ultimately, the board is responsible. But clearly, if the board is not taking action against individuals who sign, then the board will have to fall in short. Now, that brings me to the issue of not giving us accurate information. And I'm really concerned, and I share the concerns of the chairperson. If I look at your page 21, you are saying SAPL is unable to deliver on its mandate and still maintain its financial sustainability as a direct result of the withdrawal of the USO subsidy. But if I look at the figures, and I think they are on page 12 and 13, if you look at what you have declared is effectively an operating profit on the back of the subsidy. And there was no strategic planning for the phasing out. Because what you have bargained on is a bailout from government. Mm. If we look at your slide 47, the history of subsidy is very clearly described there, mid-1990 to 2001, and then there's another block, 2002 to 2014. There were subsidies reintroduced in 2002,
But you were aware in the medium-term expenditure program that it was on decline. But it appears that there were no steps taken to curtail expenditure. Now, somebody must account for this as well. Who is going to account for poor strategic planning and for poor financial planning, including budgeting planning? Because this, if you look at that page, it was a disaster in the making. And yet, it seemed that it was just business normal at South Africa Post Office. Now, the crisis appears to be blamed on the strike. And let's be honest, it is unacceptable that we have damaged property. Look, in the previous strike, it was 55 million, now it's running to 75 million. We can't approve of that. But people have a right to industrial action when things are wrong. Actually, what worries me is that it is clear that it is not as a result of the labor broking, because labor broking was only introduced. Labor broking didn't come a long way. It was introduced 2 years ago. Why was that necessary? Why did you start operating on the basis? And if I look at the figures, it appears that 65% of people are on permanent employment, and the other is about in the 30% is on the basis of casual. Why did that happen? Why did you rely on casual brokers? Labor brokers. So that is on page 7. Sorry. Just want to get the page. Is my reading correct? If you can perhaps explain. If I read here on page 7, slide 7, it appears that your number of casual employees, non-management, started to appear at the beginning of 2013. So it's only in the last financial year and then the past financial year. Why was it introduced? Because there was apparently not casual employees before. So please, can you give an understanding? And then, if I look at your page 8 and 9, it appears that some section is now going to be frozen, and that you're trying to cut down costs, and that you have some other turnaround strategy. But I must say, we've heard about the turnaround strategy at the South African Post Office over many years, and it's just not been there. It's just not been there. It was business as usual, but there was a nice, always a very good presentation, and despite the portfolio committee expressing a concern that you were running on the basis of subsidies, you were running a profit, and that you were reading the subsidy as your profit margin, which was wrong. You had to develop other business, because you knew full well that by banking on mail, whereas there was international a decline in mail revenue of 5%, you were heading for trouble. There is a slide that you are showing us here. So why did you not develop other products? Do now the mechanics with the new general strategy can make the difference. I'm sorry, chairperson. But it's really very difficult to slow that. And we are not satisfied. Well, from my perspective, I'm certainly not satisfied. But we now feel that we can trust this board and this management executive that things will go better, and that we will restore the order, and we will have a healthy environment for all workers. And they can rely on management to look at the interest. Sorry, it doesn't come to you will have to revise your whole structure. It's not true, given the perspective on page 7, that you now need more managers, because the ratio is now all of a sudden 1 is 2.2. It's not true, because you have many outfits in rural areas where you have a postmaster and that you don't really need this heavy management structure. It is wrong to give us these figures. I'm convinced that the executive management of Post Office has not been to the rural areas and to the mail centres where the workers have to operate under difficult circumstances. And I think that time is necessary for people to get out of e-controlled offices and to get in touch with the workplace. I'm not convinced of our chairperson, and they will have to explain, because we're not satisfied. Thank you.
Thanks. Chair, I did not a lot to actually pay for some of the things that the chairperson raised and the response of the minister as well. Just to put forward some of the things that could really work as remedial measures that must contribute to us dealing with the situation. The big picture that has been presented here on the financial spending of the South African post offices, and if we are to redefine that, I like that the South African post offices is not in a situation to secure a loan. So that is very worrying. So if a state-owned enterprise loses its ability to be bankable, so that says a lot. But of course, a number of things need to happen there. One of them that one of just wanted to suggest is they need to immediately work on a radical plan that consolidates the various assets of the post office, so that there could be a clearer picture of where you really stay. We don't want to wake up tomorrow and tell our people that they can no longer write letters on Valentine's Day because we are closing post offices. We can't sustain it. So it's very important that we tell that story, but also to arrive in the chair. The morale of staff, you know, there are real issues in our own communities. I mean, I want to believe that a larger people, a larger percentage of your employees at the post offices, these people who are breadwinners in their homes, meaning that if this breadwinner has not earned a salary, there will effectively not be any circulation of cash in that household. But the worst thing that could happen to, you know, when you are unemployed, you know that you are not expecting to get paid at the end. You have lived that reality perhaps for the past few years or the past few months that you have not been working. But when you are when you are employed and you reach month end and you are not sure whether they will come back in or they will come with you slow, it's also a little bit of a concern. But let's have to raise those things because we need to make sure Minister Chair, along the way we are able to take operations of the South African post offices to a level where we can create certainty amongst those who work for the South African post offices. They must know what they are really up to, but beyond creating that certainty, confirm to the South African public that this instrument of a societal transformation of connecting our people will still be there for more years to come. And that means consolidating its own assets to make sure that it has got a clear base from which it operates. It was the CFO when he was speaking, spoke about getting to the E-space and all of that. What is of interest is that the institutions that, or the SOEs that are doing some of the things that the post office could actually be changing into to change its financial health, those institutions are effectively within the reach of government. For instance, the Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa runs city to city, runs Translux buses and all of that. The South African Airways, the Shell Air tickets and all of that. Now, as you are, so that these things do not become part of, actually, in one of the discussions we were having yesterday, the chairperson of the portfolio committee was asking, do we really have an ICT strategy at times? Because we tend to hear things in broad sense. And we have been told of an e-communications plan that could be able to turn around the fortunes of the South African post offices. So it's going to be important, and this is perhaps something that has been taken in good spirit. It's going to be important that going forward, those engagements are practicalized, so that when we see it next time, we could be told that this number of co-locations in South Africa already selling Eskom electricity, and this is the kind of revenue that we're generating from it. This number of co-locations are dealing with Kumbeka, people can buy their own bus tickets and air and tickets there. These things are within your own disposal. It's not things that you must have to set as part of your strategic direction, but not be able to say practically, this is what we are already doing. And maybe linked to that, on your own e-communications brand, Telkom is effectively running with the whole first-to-main space. Now, the first-to-main space is effectively eroding the business base of the South African post office. And people are not saying anything about some of those simple, basic things that could effectively change how the post office could deal with its own health, financial health. Some of these problems are going to continue on persisting. And this is what the colleagues, the portfolio committee are raising. But I think we need to do a little bit more. There are some of the practical things that could be done, which, if done with the greater amount of focus and attention, they could be able to change how things are. Because out there, like the chairperson, out there, when employees of the post office know that they are attached to this portfolio committee, when they know Mr. Zwell, when he goes to Lower South Competition in KwaZulu-Natal, when he visits the federal, they find stop out, sorry, sorry man. These are basic things that a person that's not too intelligent to understand that when they've not been paid, it's being compromised with their own bread and butter issues at home. So I just felt that we needed to just deal with those. The last point was the issue of the CEO. Just at a procedural level, it is going to be important that we do not do things that might themselves expose our government to unlimited risk, including continuous, because we already have a problem of monies as it stands now. You have put your CEO on an extended, you use a little bit of extended leave pending suspension. We are going to be, government is going, the South African Post Office is going to incur additional costs to pay the incumbent or the CEO who is on extended leave. Just a caution to the board to try and fact-check some of these things and define parameters, Minister, that where they are serious allegations of gross misconduct which have got implications on the finances of the institution, there must be arrangements that protect the undue expenditure on the part of the institution itself. We have already had many such examples in this country. I don't think that we still want to go through the same path, especially in an institution where getting month-end funds is still something that you must think that you must hear something whether you will be getting paid or not. So I just felt that you should just raise those to employ your own presentation and make sure that we all contribute towards bringing the South African Post Office to the contract.
Thank you, Chairperson. And I am going to be long with the permission. Firstly, just to address the Minister directly, since we've had an opportunity to meet in the last couple of months. The President has talked often about the investments in infrastructure required in our economy to get our economy moving, get the kind of growth that we need in order to be a successful nation, in order to accommodate the number of new people seeking work. I would posit that the South African Post Office is as important to the economy of this country as roads and rail and other infrastructure links are. And probably for that reason, it falls under the Department of Telecommunications. It's absolutely essential to the economy. So it's not just the poor minister, but
that are being affected by this spike. In the businesses, it is people across the country who are absolutely dependent on the post office because of their monopoly party, but also because of the services that they've provided in the past to keep the economy of this country moving. In the last few months, they've been unable to do that. The chairperson has alluded to that, the amount of mail we get, the phone calls we get from business, from people. A lady last night phoned me from Bloemfontein, she was in tears because her daughter lived outside the country. She had no communication from them at all because they rely on the postal service for that communication. A bookseller in Johannesburg, right in the CBD, is on the point of closure because he cannot send any parcels out through the post office. I've got an endless list of stories. I promised them I would raise them personally before the committee, but we'd be down until 4 o'clock this afternoon. They know who they are, and they depend on the post office. The strike is crippling. Minister, with respect, the strike didn't arise from labour voting. The strike arose from a failure of management and the board of the South African Post Office to honour their promises to the casual workers, to make them from casual into permanent part-time workers. It was a failure to honour an obligation that caused this strike, this current strike, this debilitating strike, the long strike in 3 years. The workers are being paid, and perhaps you could confirm this for me, CFO. The workers are being paid 23 rand an hour, casual workers. I believe it's a fraction of what permanent employees get, and it actually violates the principle of equal work and equal pay. So I'd be interested in your comments on that. The fact that the post office continues to lose money as part of its universal service obligations, I do agree with Mr. Nongoba. And in fact, let me compliment Mr. Nongoba on his presentation and his courage in appearing in the Thoughts Committee and in place of the acting CEO. It's a very hot seat that you're sitting in. In terms of funding those universal service obligations, any business model will tell you that if you are on a loss-making project, and the Honourable Pinion alluded to this, if you continue down the road where you can see that you're going to lose money, then surely you have a look at that model that you're rolling out and say, what can we do differently? Because there's a pandemic coming that's coming right for us, and we're just going to stand in the way and let it run us flat. Because that's what you've done. That's what the board of this post office has done. You've taken, there'd be no means to mitigate that risk, and you've seen it coming for years. I'll give you an example. We had a presentation from the Department of Posts in Sweden, thanks to the chairperson for arranging that. And what they do in Sweden is they have the local service stations that act as small post offices. In the United Kingdom, for example, they have local tobacconists in the areas that act as post offices. We have a ministry for small enterprise development under the Zuma administration. Their purpose is to empower and grow small enterprises. Has the post office actually engaged with any of other government ministries, trading industry, anything like that, to see whether there's a different model that you can introduce that would empower our people, empower local? Let's give you an example, the Spaza shop, for example, that you can use a Spaza shop in a remote area to deliver that kind of service and actually empower them in that way to meet the universal service obligation. That they could be small, they could be profitable, and it wouldn't drain the organization. What I'm referring to here is a lack of innovation and innovative thinking in any of the plans that I can see. The chairperson of the board, you talked about comprehensive strategy, you talked about sustainability without a government subsidy. If the post office is relying on a government subsidy in order to keep operating, then there's a serious problem with your business. I don't think that any government can continue to bail you out the kind of money you're asking for. If I look at the financials as you project to them, and I'll come back to that in a minute, you would be then projecting a loss for the year of around R1 billion. That equates to South African Airways. Just to put it into perspective, and that is alarming. With a number of turnaround strategies that we've heard about and read about and that I've seen in the strategy, the presentation document that talks about a turnaround strategy, and now there's another turnaround strategy, I'm a little bit confused. If you can tell me what number of turnaround strategy we're on right now, and when did it start, when did the latest one start, when it was still about to start. And if that same turnaround strategy
is being driven by the same people who have driven the X number of turnaround strategies we've had before, then can I suggest we find some new people to do this job? In terms of labour, organised labour, I'm very pleased to see that organised labour here for the committee, and certainly you are welcome. I believe there are a number of trade unionists that actually sit on the South African Post Office Board. Is that correct? Who are they? What unions do they represent? How long have they been sitting on board? And frankly, given the unrest, how effective have they been as board members? You think that being part of the Post Office Board, some responsibility has to lie with those board members. Julie, in terms of the presentation, once again, talking plans after years of spite. We're still in a planning stage with no resolution. Where are the solutions? If I can turn to revenue, you've given figures from 2014. Minister, thanks for the apology about the delay in presenting the financial reports. I do have a lot of sympathy for your position, Minister. It is a new department that you've inherited, and it is a problem that you've inherited. So thank you for the apology regarding the annual financial statements. Can you give us an idea when those will be finalised and presented to this committee and therefore to Parliament? It's essential that we have them. It would be very nice to know about the board. It would be very nice to know, beyond what we're reading in the media, everybody seems to have information except this committee. It would be nice to know what the board is being paid, how many members are on that board, what top management is being paid as well to do this job that appears not to be paid. In terms of the
next...
No, I'm not. These are questions I'm asking, but I've got to give context to the question. In terms of the 2014 revenue, given that we don't have audited financial statements for Parliament, those figures of 2014, how accurate are they that are featured in your presentation? Can we rely on those figures, or are they going to be disputed? And I talk in terms of revenue and in terms of costs. In terms of the stated profits and losses as we proceed forward, when was the universal service obligation introduced? When was that imposed on you? Because clearly that would have an effect on your bottom line. Then in terms of the costs to get mail moving again, and frankly, in my opinion, it's absolutely critical, and I appeal to the Communications Workers Union and to staff, in the interests of our nation and our people, get the mail moving again. What are the costs to get that mail moving? Have we got any projections in terms of overtime and weekend work, what that's going to cost? As far as the turnaround goes, and again, because I don't have sight of the post office balance sheet, so it's not say technically the entity is bankrupt, but just on the information that I have, here's my soundbite. The post office is bankrupt. If your expense exceeds your revenue, you are bankrupt. So I'd really like to know how you're going to get out of that hole besides approaching the Minister for Finance. Shima, you mentioned there was an email from the bank on the 17th of October. What was that email about? What was the contents of that mail? Minister, if I can mention this to you, you said you've now issued another letter of guarantee to the bank for the post office. What is the amount of that guarantee, and what is the total guarantee that's currently in place? I'll just turn to the presentation. Going forward, whenever we're presented with anything, I note that the Post Bank revenue is included in the Post Office financials. Given that the Post Bank is about to be put, you're working on a corporatization of the Post Bank, in any future presentation, we can take the Post Bank revenue right out of the Post Bank financial and present it separately, please, because clearly it's going to be a separate entity. And then just on the future plans for dealing with labour, I noticed in the media, and I may be correct, and I'm open to correction, the Communications Workers Union has taken up the fight on behalf of the casual workers and certainly represented them as a spokesperson in some form or another. Do you have any forum in place that you can address their concern? And as I said, let me emphasize again, I have a lot of sympathy for the life of the casual workers.
then we had nothing on the pension fund and the post office pension fund. I've heard that the post-retirement medical aid that's included in your financials has been stopped for employees that go on pension since 2005. But the current employees in that medical aid fund are funding people from the previous time in the post office who have retired and are now doing medical aid benefits. Can you confirm or deny that? And then the pension fund allegations, have those been subjected to any kind of forensic audit? And if you can just give me an explanation as to why the fund was moved from Sunland to Old Mutual, from Old Mutual to Sunland, and what sort of advice was given to employees. I had many calls from people very, very worried about their pension funds and the decline in their values over the last couple of months. In terms of your business model and the declining male returns, that graph that was shown that showed male like that as a portion of your revenue, I mean, 4 years ago, you could see that trend, where it was going. That you didn't step in and do some kind of remedial action that points to the real failure of management, because that wasn't any secret. The perceptions about the post office on the slide, about being unreliable, unable to deliver mail, etc., you know, those perceptions are reality, and that is the reality. That's not a perception. That's what people think about the post office. So as the years go by, your business is getting worse and worse, and you are hemorrhaging customers at a rapid rate. They are finding other solutions. The Sisters Press Association has been in touch with publishers. They are looking at other ways of sending their magazines out, and it matters. All the trade industry magazines, other ways except through the post office. My wife publishes a magazine, the third edition now that hasn't gone out, the impact on the economy. Just letting you know. They are finding other ways to say how are the strikes and the strike action, and here's a broadside for the workers' unions. You are doing yourself out of a job because people are going somewhere else, and the government will not continue to bail out this organization. Or if I was government, I certainly wouldn't. Your turnaround strategy, I had a look at it, it's very different to the rest of the presentation. A lot of it is MBA jargon speak. If I was producing an MBA turnaround for the post office, those are the five slides that I will put forward to my professor. I'd really like to see some concrete solutions. In tables, things like traffic fines, and that. There's a website called www.paycity.co.za. Well, you know what? You can do all of that stuff there already. There are people that are streets ahead of you. You need to be innovative. You need to have vision that's beyond what's already available and find those solutions. So, frankly, where's the turnaround? As the last comment chairperson of Mr. Golding of HCI, he, according to media reports and the announcement on television, he regularly invested 24 million rand in Enerim because he thought the share price, you know, buying 4 rand, they could rise, they could make the money. He did that without board approval. The share dropped to 127, and he did the honorable thing and resigned and left HCI. Well, that was 24 million rand. You guys are talking about half a billion. Perhaps there's a message there for you. Thank you very much.
Another question?
Thank you, Chairperson. Having served on this committee and its predecessor now for a total of 3 years, I confess I have a feeling of deja vu with this report. There is nothing new in it. There is no innovative idea. There is no... see no concept of the kind of trouble that you're in. I mean, I expected to hear today that this is what you're doing tomorrow to get the mail out. Silence. Absolute silence. You know, while you might be negotiating with unions to come to some agreement on pay, what are you doing to get the mail out? You know, because this is an absolute crisis for the nation. And you've been sitting there humming and hawing and talking, and we've did many interactions with the post office over the past couple of years. And this committee, or both the legislative committee, put forward many ideas, saying, have you looked at these ideas? Are you entertaining me? There are many ways you could actually add to the business to the post office. None of them are here. None of them might be anxious. But, you know, frankly, I think we have a better idea than what's out here. And the issue of the smaller shop is frequently talked about. The fact that retailers can get their logistics, their goods delivered all around the country at a fraction of the cost that the post office is doing. And why didn't you piggyback with these people? All these other innovative things. But no, there was business as usual. In fact, this whole report looks like business as usual for the post office, which means that the lights are going to go out very soon. Because there really is nothing here that actually makes me have any hope for this organization. Just a couple of things, Minister. I wanted to know what personal interaction you've had with the business community. I'm talking about the magazine distributors, the retailers who actually rely on the post office to get their stuff out. Apart from the personal people, ordinary citizens, you rely very much on the direct marketing stuff that goes out around the country every month end. You've lost that. Chances are you will not get it back. I wouldn't come back to the post office if I was running a commercial business. And in fact, 20-odd years ago, when I did actually run an event that depended on direct marketing, and there was a strike at that big sorting place at the south of Johannesburg, I forget what it's called now, that put me into huge debt. That was 20-odd years ago. And in fact, any direct marketing person who relies on the post office has needs their head rate. Now, we talked, we saw the train coming down the tunnel towards this little great speed for the past, idle for 3 years. And we said then, what negotiations are you having with Treasury to sustain the universal service obligation payments? Because, if you're going to be delivering to areas that are not commercially viable, you do need some kind of subsidy for that. And typically, over in discussions with Treasury, we're in discussions with Treasury. What has Treasury said to those discussions? Why did they say, no, you can't have a continuation of the subsidy? Was it because they didn't trust you guys with the money? That may well be part of it. Also concerned, we have here on page 5, the financial constraints to convert with casual labour to permanent workers. Now, I remember when this whole program was discussed a couple of years ago, and he said, can you afford to do this? Can the post office afford to formalize the employment of casual workers? And we were told that because the post office knows the money, that it all happened out of the proceeds of paid for labor growth. That was patently a lie. Patently a lie of this committee. Because the money here, you're now talking about living within option 3, 855 million. Now, I recall, and I stand to be corrected here, perhaps we need to go back to the room, but I remember at some stage at the start of this project, someone said, oh, look, we're basically celebrating cost us for 40 million a year. Thankfully, we would like to. Too many chiefs, and also one of them, apart from the board, who obviously is incompetent, are the senior management of the post office the right people, assuming you have a decent turnaround strength, the right people turn around? Do you have a skill to turn it around? Mm-hmm. To me, you need almost a corporate hit squad to go into the post office and bust out all the people who are taking salaries that are false pretenses and put in highly qualified people who can actually do the job. Because, there has been no visual improvements or inspiration coming out of the post office. Then just to go on to slide 19, mail backlog will be addressed as follows. Business as usual, it seems. We say that we're prioritizing the service. Now, what kind of stuff has been lined up for all being built from the past 4 or 5 months? Increasing the staff capacity through the entire value chain through overtime, extended hours, and working on Sunday, just to get a mail out. One assumes that the workers will not be asked for overtime for that. Already. If they are going to be paid overtime to catch up the work they should be doing for the past 3 months, who's going to pay for it? Out of which budget? Who's going to pay? Yeah. Think about the Treasury. Just on the perception. It's not a perception. It's actually said because of you don't understand why the public is wringing their hands about this anti-perception of post office service. It's not a perception, it's a reality. the subcontracting procedure and says when we need this one. Yeah, basically I think that the board should resign. One block. You are responsible for this train, as I hit you, and we saw it all coming. And just, yeah, one of the things that was going to be a business improvement to hopefully add some cash to the box this year was going to be the distribution of set-top boxes. Now, Minister, this comes to you and to your many predecessors. The digital migration policy and rollout has been an absolute comedy of errors for years. The delayed revised digital migration policy is somewhere to be stomped about in a 34 in the cabinet. The fact that the post office doesn't have revenue from its expected revenue stream of its distribution of set-top boxes is a direct policy failure of the government, because this has been unnecessarily delayed. Had the government actually stuck to its guns and not got sidetracked into turf wars and all sorts of other things, actually led the digital migration process with some energy, this would have cost the post office's trials for a while. So this is a direct policy failure where the cabinet, the government, has actually let down, aggravated the post office's cash flow. I agree with that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you, Chairperson. On slide number 6, there's an arrow and they talk about the gentleman to cooperative. Can they tell us which criteria are we going to choose? Which workers will employ permanently and which one not permanently? Does the board think they've done their work when they look at the situation now? The office you're operating now, are you renting the building? If yes, why you leave your building? You go to Centurion. Just for interest sake, did the executives with us receive their salaries or allowance, and has there ever been amounts that the executives have paid their salaries? Because it's not good, and not give the support his money at the end of the month. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Just a few remarks from me. I think right now we must park the future discussion. We must talk about now how do we get post office out of where it is now. For you to be able to talk about future, turning around, talking about e-postal services, you need to sort out what is now the problem. We need to know now how we get post office to wait on the avenue now. That's the issue. And the people mean is that the board, unlike many other boards, has post office, actually tell you true. Sense of power that the board has. Other boards, their powers are limited. This board's powers are not limited. And why we have expected today, chairman of the board, is when you arrive here and tell me that the CEO is suspended not on special leave, the CFO is suspended not sitting here with us. Your if that was not the case, you look at the initiator of the cost of the investigation, the overruns that are not authorized. The Treasury regulations, the CFMA, if the CFO can't understand the laws that govern running the finances of an industry, that's a problem. So I expect that when the board are here, when she got a strike that has been running 3 months, no one has faced any consequences. No one. We are sitting here with a problem of over a month, and unfortunately this is going to be taking time. We've not engaged you, we allow this case to deal with this. It's 4 months down the line, You are talking to us as if this thing happened last week. So which means that and I'm hoping, Minister, these are things that within your powers you would have to consider. I wouldn't want to go into the extent of just talking about it. But another problem that I have with the workers and the leaders of the women who are here, you can't say when you have an institution and you have the best interest of the institution, you go and you do not formally declare your side. For me, you have gone and also ignore the laws of this country. The labor laws that protect you to get into strike, but also get you in terms of the processes. Because if you get into those processes where you declare strike, there's a dispute in the processes, but you then dispute that we have not agreed. There needs to be formal processes that you engage with. We can't have people, there's an intimidation, but there is the workers that are intimidating those who want to work, and you need to take responsibility for the damages that have happened, because these are state funds. We can't continue to invest into properties, invest in the infrastructure that workers found and feel that they have a right to destroy. Not your property, the property of the state and the property of South Africans. South African unions in this country need to understand that. These are our institutions. These are our monies that are paying for these institutions. You have no right to go and destroy them. But messing up with people's life when then post office, which are sitting with people's medication in fact, that is supposed to be delivered. If you don't want to work, step aside, fight your battle, but don't destroy what does not belong to you. We can't have a situation where leaders decide that they can continue, as if this country has no laws. The reason why after 1994 the laws that govern them protect labor in this country was to make sure that labor has a voice, but they are platforms to do it. It can't be labor. After all this struggle, they bring law. The same law, the same struggle that they fought for country 1994 can be. We need to condemn what has happened in post office in the strongest and possible ways. It must never happen again. If you want to strike, go to the courtroom and declare strike. This unlawful strike has to come to an end. If you have the what workers now must worry about whether they will have a job next month. It's not only anything about interest. Look at the financial status of post office. If you look at the financial state of post office, it tells you that the possibility is that you might not have a post office next month. Workers should be out of a job. Is that what we stand for as labourers? We want to be leaders of labor who are responsible, who have the best interest of the worker at heart. The situation is, what I'm calling for action from the board that needs to happen, I'm calling action from the minister, action from the board, and I'm calling action from the leaders of the unions. We can't have this situation because this is our entity. We want to see stuff working. We have the best interest of this entity. It has a bigger role to play. It has a responsibility to South Africans. The people who happen to be in this institution, you can't hold this institution to answer. If you have no best interest of this institution, get out. And we get people who have the interest of this institution as to go and serve the people of South Africa. Because it's really unfortunate that 3 months down the line when this thing happened, we have to sit with the gloomy future of the post office. For example, I mean, I agree with the colleagues. When we talk about that you are going to catch up, you are going to have to work overtime, we can't pay salaries now. Has the workers agreed to go and work overtime without pay? Has that discussion happened? Because even when you look at what is happening, I wonder if it's the employment equity forum working itself, if it exists at all. Because some of these things are negotiated and not discussed today. You've got to have functioning labor employment equity forum. You've got to have functioning council, bargaining council. And it's not correct for SAPO to come. See, for that's what I'm saying. I'm perplexed by your presentation. Talking about previous, you can't declare a subsidy a profit. I'm not sure which percentage or accounting you are using. A subsidy is a subsidy, it can't be a profit. And this is when I went back to the report for the previous comment, this is what they raised with me. When the board was moved, taking the decision and someone taking the decision to move from that building, the basis of that decision was that you have a profit, which was not a profit, and the committee disputed that you have a profit. The committee that you is not a profit, it's a subsidy. And you're giving notification by treasurer that the subsidy would be withdrawn. Over time, nothing happened. So it's like people behaved as usual, business as usual, even at the state where the institution was collapsing in their hands. We continue as if no, it's business as usual, and we are still in the end. I would go into the street as a worker. If I was told that I'm going to be employed, there's commitments that have been made and they're not met, then I feel bad. It's not that they have to do it the right way. They must go and then do the right way. But in terms of their demands, they're justified. Why did you agree on those processes? Why did you make a commitment when you knew it was unaffordable, you can't do it? And you don't even have the decency to, that's why I asked about the payments. You don't even have the decency to talk to your workers when you have challenges. It can't be that workers wake up in the morning with no salary in their accounts. You have no decency to even talk with them. But as far as they have challenges, you're not going to get your fun. You are playing with the lives of South Africans. It's wrong. It can be corrected. You know, the issue on the finances as well, I want to reserve the comments. Until SAPO came with an annual report and a financial statement. What is, I thought they were careful. You come to table finances that are not only just for the men. When they come to Francio, it's wrong. Well, I'm not sure what, on what basis have you came with the finances. But you know very well they're not only checked. When money just comes and query this and you have to change, what are you going to do? Because this becomes a document that is before Parliament. You are sending it to Parliament. I had discussion when, that's why we also decided to withdraw your corporate transition. You are still a corporate transition, you're talking about your target and all these things. I can't have that discussion. Until post office has tabled an annual report, we are able to assess which of the annual report. If the minister was able with your finances and say that you can't sign off this when you went, and you can't present the finances that are out of check, that are implicit, that are recording treasury relations in how you must count and how you must see your balances. That's what you know. That's what the chairperson and member. I'm not sure why CEO is still there. And I would really appeal, because this thing of putting this technology in is a fancy way, my apologies, chairperson, I don't want to do it, but it's a fancy way. Especially when, it's either you decide this person has a case to answer, therefore you suspend and put processes, or leave the person at work. It's either to me. Why do you especially? You either suspend the person, because the minute you decide that there is something, it means you are looked. There's something that you are looking at. Obviously, when you are pushing charges, you must assign the person. It can't be special leave. Why is it special leave? Not for mention. So, I'm saying this, members and the coalition of SAPO, that you need to understand the gravity of the situation we are sitting. We want our post office as members of parliament and South Africans. And we want it to do what it's expected to do. We want our post office as South Africans because it has a role when government took a decision that this post office must be there. It was because we knew as government that there is a need for this post office. Stop holding us at ransom. It can't be that now. Minister can't focus on other things. It's focused on, I feel this for you, Minister. Because if you have to, from time to time, now negotiate every month, you must now touch the age of salary so that you can start looking and worry whether the employer are going to be paid and therefore start negotiating from. So it can't be. It can't be right. Because
the minute from that time you know that you're going to have problems, surely plans are in place. And what an agreement must be kept if the situation is untenable. You have to say to the public and to the workers, you are going to have to change. You must say that. If you can't sustain even the salary bill, that means and it needs to be starting in management. You must start to be open to South Africans. Are you able to afford to pay the salary? Because we can't, today's situation, because we can't sit here and not be clear what's going to happen in Portugal. They're not saying anything to us. That's what I'm saying. Let's see the future things. Now, this thing of e-what-what and other things, like introduction of new ways of creating it, let's talk about now today. Can you tell workers of Sapo they are going to have their job? That's the part. All things that they need to be a need from management because of the situation of financial situation. But many of finance recently was shaping the budget. And if all of us listened, the constraints that government has in terms of resources, where are we going to get the money? So that's the discussion we need to have. And I thought that by this time the board would have had this discussion, the executive would have had this discussion, but by the time you have, to tell you the honest truth, you seem to be appearing here without proper strategizing, you don't seem to have done a proper analysis of the situation, you don't seem to have a proper discussion in terms of how you get the situation out. I'm not impressed by the conversations that the union side here. When I know they speak to some language when they are out. Since the new issue they said that they are revising their wage offer to 8%, they're not even managed to pay salary. If we were in discussion and I showed them that there is a serious problem, surely I don't even see the view to issue a statement about increases when it can't even secure the salary of workers today. For me, it says that you have not had engagement. If for the fact that the workers are saying they are prepared to go back and work, and the others that are still intimidating, it means workers of post office don't understand the situation the post office is at. But if everybody in that institution understands where you are, maybe we are seeing something different here. But what I'm seeing in front of you is not a rosy picture, it's worrying. It's actually depressing, to be honest. I'm not sure, it's not giving you hope. Because, I mean, people are receiving answers even from us. I don't know what you are trying to talk about social security.
Certainly less amount of money that was being paid
to the permit workers. That is correct. In fact, the understanding and Honorable Sheen has sort of referred to it was that we were going to absorb these casuals in, on the same terms as they had been when they were with labor brokers. So the difference between that and what you see today is that today, what the absorption implies is that all the conditions of service that are normally given to a fully employed permanent worker are what the casuals require. And when you take that into account, it gives the figure that you are now seeing at, I believe, on slide number 5. In the past, 2011, 2012, when we came to the house, the issue was we were absorbing them on the same terms of conditions as they were being employed by the labor brokers. The only difference was that the full amount of money that was being given to labor brokers was now going to be given to the casual workers. So that's the difference you are seeing there. The issue of counseling, I'll leave for now, I'll ask the staff to respond when we get to it. The issue of the cost of the USO and why it is not correlating with the subsidy. I think we need to appreciate that the subsidy as a sum of money, given the operational model of the post office, was never going to cover the entire obligations of the USO. The thinking, I believe, in 1998 when the policy was first drawn up, was that by creating what was defined as a reserved area, the reserved area would have created enough revenue at that point in time to assist in covering the cost of the USO. What has changed over the last 10 years is simply that the reserved area no longer is able to cover the cost of the USO. In other words, the additional cost of the USO. Which is why you will find that you have the difference of costs of post offices amounting to 473 million to sustain them. But you can only generate revenue of 73 million of those offices. And on the other hand, you might have a subsidy amount from that, for example, of 69 or 52 million. So you can see the difference between those numbers. So this is why I think the discussions, for example, at the ITC, ICT cost review are quite crucial. Because it says, how then do we, if the reserve area fund is no longer able to sustain the USO, what do we then do to go forward in terms of sustaining the USO? For example, because post office is part of ICT, should we be allowed post office to tap into the universal service fund, for example? So those are some of the questions that we are trying to grapple with and see when it comes to answers. There's a question that asks, why labor broking? Why do we start seeing labor broking numbers introduced in 2013? You will recall that prior to 2013, to be more precise, prior to 2012, the labor, what we are now calling casuals in the South African post office, were not considered workers of the South African post office. They were workers of the temporary employment service. As of 2012, when we curtailed the contract of those labor broking services, we absorbed all of those employees. Hence, you start to see in 2013, 2014, you start to see these numbers now being factored into the South African post office. And that's just to explain to Honorable Hillian why suddenly you see 2013, 14, there are numbers raising to labor brokers. Then there's the question of why we did not develop any new products when we were quite aware that back there is annual 5% drop in mail volumes. Honorable members, I alluded earlier on to the fact that over the last 5 or so years, if not even before that, there has been insignificant investment in the infrastructure of the post office that will allow it to actually leverage any new product it wants to do. I'll give a such example. As far back as, if not 8 or 7 years ago, post office was on the leading edge of providing money transfer services for regional money transfer services. We have long been overtaken by other institutions, including Pick and Pay Labor, because we simply did not have investments in our infrastructure to leverage that new product. And this, unfortunately, Jefferson, has been the consistent pattern. That whenever you have a new product in mind, you look at your infrastructure to say, how do we invent this new product? Only to find that you actually don't have relevant infrastructure, invested infrastructure that would allow you to actually make this product come to market. So this is part of the problem that we are facing. Honorable McKenzie spoke to, let me get to the right question, the different models for retail, for example. I think you'll be aware that we've come to the house before and we've talked to trying to roll out a multi-channel strategy. In its infancy, the multi-channel strategy is what is represented by what we refer to as retail postal agencies. So we have something to that effect, but it needs to be scaled up. We need to look at what other entities are prepared to house postal services and be as entrepreneurs that they're able to leverage that to sustain their own business. But again, the same issue arises, Chairperson. If you have not invested sufficiently in your own infrastructure, it becomes a problem. So, for example, you can go to a retail agency and say, here's a postal deal. But it's in such a state that even an entrepreneur can't use that deal in order to lend its services. So, these are some of the challenges that we are facing in trying to roll out some of these innovative solutions. The question of when will the U.S. oil import? 1998, the policy was done. U.S. oil, we have started around about the year 2000. And as I say, the U.S. oil for us, as a policy concept, is not a problem at all. The issue revolves around what is the funding model for such a U.S. oil. Initially, I believe the intention was that the reserve area that was given to the post office, for which reason ICASA regulates the post office, would have been sufficient at that point in time to cover the extra elements of the U.S. oil. Regrettably, over the last couple of years, this is no longer the case. And we are now facing this deficit that we are talking to. There's a question about, do we have a forum that looks to look at the current problem that we have, particularly in relation to casuals, etc. Yes, indeed, the forum does exist. We have set up this forum. It has been at work since the 3rd of October. And progress has been slow, but certainly there have been robust discussions about what we need to do. And, Chairperson, yes, you raise a very important point. That if, in fact, we are saying that it is no longer sustainable to work with the headcount that we have, given the shortfall in revenues that we have, then these are some of the serious discussions that we must have in that forum. To say this is what must be done, because there's no reason the money to sustain. But that leadership forum is at work, it is working with the unions to try and see if we can come to an agreement about how we sustain the post office going forward. Critically, the first task of that leadership forum is to bring the strike to halt for the industrial action, whichever way people would like to address it. The question of the post-retirement medical aid. You will note that at the time when the telecoms ministry then were being split between telecom and SABO, there was a decision and certain commitments made to pensioners who were coming from the different entities. Part of the agreement that was made was that those pensioners would continue to enjoy the post-retirement medical aid. However, because of the related cost of that, at some point it was thought to say that those who are from 2005, who became employed from 2005 onwards, would no longer benefit from this because it becomes unsustainable. There will be too many people on a post-retirement medical aid for which the organization would not be able to lend finance. And this is actually a critical issue that's part of the bargaining chamber, and part of the dispute between the management and the unions is actually in discussion on this issue. But the basic principle is that there was this agreement that was struck with the pensioners at that time, that they will continue to receive medical aid in their retirement. Questions by Honourable Sheen. The question about what are we doing to try and get the mail out? I think that the contingency measures that we ordinarily rely on as a Southern Post Office have been rendered moot simply by the nature of the industrial action. As you quite rightly pointed out, Chairperson, it's an unprotected strike. The illegalities involved in this strike are such as we are having what are maybe described as guerrilla warfare tensions, where a post office is hit in the east land, and by the time you respond to that post office being hit, another post office has been hit in Swan, etc. And people are moving around the cross, hitting various post offices. And as a result, whatever contingency plans you make, because of this level of violence and intimidation, it becomes almost impossible to roll out those contingency plans. So for example, you might have a situation where on the floor, the mail is being sorted. But now get the drivers to go out and deliver the mail, or to get the post offices to open their doors for allow customers to come in. They are afraid to do so because there is this high level of intimidation. So we find most of the mail centers are in a position to move out the mail from where it is. But at the delivery end, we have a problem because of intimidation. And this has been a unique experience for us at the post office. We've never had a strike of this nature before. So we are also grappling with how best to reach out. So far, after the call was, initial call was made for workers to come back to work, there's been a steady improvement of workers coming back to work. So a lot of the work is happening in the best centers. The difficulty, as I reiterate, is at the front end where it must now be corrected by the employee or delivered to the post office. There's so much violence and intimidation there that people are simply not prepared to listen to their rights to do so. I'm just trying to pick the questions I've been asking them, my colleagues will respond to rather than start. There was a question about which workers will you employ permanently and which not, according to slide number 6. And I reiterated, the intention at the beginning of the 2012 when we removed the labor programs was that we were going to absorb everyone. But we were absorbing people on the basis, first of all, that they were coming in on the same terms that they were engaged by their labor programs. That was number one. Number two, we indicated that out of this pool of workers, we would draw from this pool of workers regularly into permanent employment as positions became vacant within the Southfield Post Office. That was the second step. Thirdly, particularly in relation to retail, we ran into a problem around the question of machines. Members will be aware, for example, that because of the legal space, phase requirements were such that we had to have a machine. So one of the things we did in retail was to identify in that pool of workers how many of them had a machine so that we could absorb those into the retail side. What we were left with then was that there were a number of workers that either did not have a machine or were at that point not being permanently employed, where there was still not enough vacancies within the host office to absorb them. And I think it is precisely this slow intake that you see arising here today, this purpose law that is now suddenly impacted us, that because of this slow intake from the casual pool into permanent employment, the frustration builds up, people became very angry at the situation, and of course, as somebody has already alluded, because they were coming in on the same terms as they were employed as labor brokers, it was very frustrating because they were not getting the same pay. To that end, we created an entry band called AA. What AA simply meant was, although from a race position, you were still being paid the same race as when you were labor broker, you were then going to enjoy any benefits. For example, you will then have annual leave of 22 days, family responsibility days, maternity leave, sick leave, worker compensation, accidental insurance, and funeral cover. So these were then added to the AA plan, which up until that point, the casual did not enjoy those terms and benefits. But of course, they did not then enjoy the other benefits, which is pension fund, medical aid, bedroom, chicken house, and above. And those are the benefits that clearly they want now, and which clearly are giving rise to the numbers that we are relating to. This 400 million that we say, if you get everybody on board and include all of these benefits, this is the financial impact you are going to have on the South African Post Office. I think those are the ones I will do with. I will give the floor to the board, and there's a couple of more questions for the CFO. I'm sure they can do some of those questions. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe let me first start with the pension fund and the move from Sanlam, from Old Mutual to Sanlam. Old Mutual is a strategic objective for them, decided to concentrate on umbrella funds. And we didn't fit the strategic outlook going forward, so we had to change our administrator from Old Mutual to Sanlam. So that's how the change came about. And the change happened since December last year, and we've had everybody converted, and we've had the changeover running quite smoothly from that change. Another point that was asked around the pension fund probably is the allegations that have been mentioned on the pension fund. The pension fund of the South African Post Office is a standalone entity. The pension fund can sue and can be sued on its own name. And the pension fund is run separately from the post office. So the funds that flow through the pension fund are not accessible to the post office. So as far as the security of the funds are concerned, there can't be any tapping into those funds.
I think what has brought in the allegations was the contribution holiday aspect. Now what had happened is back in 2004-2005, when the decision by the pension fund was taken to convert from defined benefit to defined contribution happened, the employer was given a contribution holiday at the time. Now, the reason why the employer would be given a contribution holiday when you convert from defined benefit to defined contribution is when you are on defined benefit, by its very nature, the risk of the fund resides more with the employer. Because should anything go wrong with the fund, the employer needs to step in and make good on the deficit. And because of that, the employer then will have to contribute much more than when defined contribution. Now, on defined contribution, how it works is the risk is shared equally between the employer and employee. So it's really a rent-to-rent type of thing. So the employer was then given that contribution holiday in 2004. And the contribution holiday at the time that the employer enjoyed was in the region of 395 million. The employer then, because of the contribution holiday to the employer, it flowed into the employer. So the employer, with that contribution holiday, decided to then, in its books, decided then to invest it in money markets and so forth. So that amount then grew within the post office books. So that's what happened with that contribution holiday back in 2003 and 2004. There was then a question around the financials for the 2013-14 financial year and why we are presenting them and what is happening should the numbers change. The numbers as presented here, we presented them as unaudited numbers. And because we presented them as unaudited numbers, that signifies that they are currently preliminary numbers. And we were presenting them to show a base of where we have ended in the 2013-14 financial year, so that we can be able to compare how we have fared in the previous financial year to the current financial year, because operations are still going on. There was another question on how much do our casual workers get. And as Andrew has already said, that when there was the labor broker and the employee who belonged to the labor broker, the amount was shared between the two people, i.e. the employer, the employee, and the labor broker. And now the total amount that the employees get is 24 rand, and yes, it's true, does not equate to what a permanent employee gets. And the permanent employee gets 40 rand an hour as opposed to the 24 rand that has been alluded. And I think Andrew did mention the RPAs, where is a different model of a post office. I think it's very important that we just mention the number when we talk to the 2,497.7. The RPA number that reflects today is actually 894. Because they are cheaper to maintain, it is quite a viable option to consider going forward. There was a question on how much would it cost us when we get back to operations. It is expected that when we get fully fledged operations, given the amount of backlogs that we have, it is expected that over time we'll have to be paid. And currently, well, when normal operations, on average over time is about 4 million rand. So given the fact that we have not been fully operational for a period of 12 weeks or give or take 11 to 12 weeks that we have not been operational on, it is expected that this amount will grow. It won't be an average of 4 million, it may have to double or even triple, depending on
how the blogs look at a time. And this will separately erode the revenues that we'll have to generate going into the future. Thank you, Chairperson.
Are we done, Mr. Chairman? There's a couple of questions that still need to be responded to. One involves counseling. There was a question about whether the counseling will happen in house or not. There was a question relating to trade unions on the board. There was a question on risk management. And I think that's further recent questions from us. Oh, sorry, why did you leave your previous field and go to Sitchin? Thank you.
Okay, I would like to respond to the accounting question. I think we have alluded quite a lot in this morning's conversation around the victimization that our employees have gone through. We've had quite a few incidents of assault. And there have been cases though, so we have done the criminal charges for those cases with the highly departed people. So we have followed the legal process as well. But we still have the challenge of integrating people back into the workplace. I think you can imagine what it is like if you have been against each other for so long. It's like a prolonged trauma. And what we have done is arranged with people outside organizations to assist us. So it was a combination of traditions. We are not only doing trauma counseling. What we also are doing is we are doing a bit of coaching to our managers. We're doing a lot of debriefing. And then when we finish with the trauma counseling, what happens? But we also do things like conflict resolution. So we are trying to give a whole sort of offer of the different needs that the people will have. Currently we're using our in-house EAP practitioners who are qualified either as social workers or psychologists. We have also brought in other HR people with appropriate qualifications to assist in this process. And then we have tapped into people like Lifeline who's assisting us as a physician psychologist who are doing it for free for us. So although we're using in-house and external resources, it will not be at any additional cost to the organization. And they're focused on critical areas, so our first focus is on this, the Gauteng and Johannesburg region, and in the specifically also in the Pretoria area. So that is currently the status of the country.
I'd like to answer, there's something that's changed in contradiction between Mr. Longo and the CFO. Mr. Longo, when you said that the National Postal Agency, which is the postal agency, is not by your what did you say?
Okay, very much, yes. I was saying that is part of the multi-channel strategy that we provide by the options for the postcards. Not that it's not by. Thank you. Sorry for the dissension.
So thank you, Chairperson. On the representation of the unions in the board, this is in accordance with the Act, which requires that the unions nominate two people for consideration by the minister to appoint the board. So at the moment, we do have one board member who can be through that particular process. And when the board member is in the board, he's acting as a board member of the South African Post Office. Union letters are normally looked at from the advice of that particular person within the board. On the issue of competence management, as a board, we have approved an organizational structure which is talking to the strategic turnaround plan. And in terms of that organizational structure, we are actually systematically getting out of the old organizational structure which has just too many executive functions. And within the organizational structure, our focus was to also create a unit which was specifically focusing on business generation. And in terms of complementing that particular structure, we have gone a long way in terms of the institutions in Turkish and so on. So we are adhering to that competency of management as a course of this in relation to taking the strategic plan forward. In terms of dealing with the consequence management related to irregular exchange, that is a process which is currently going on. And that is when we indicate that from the board, we have been assured that at least about 8 of our senior executives have gone through the disciplinary process until the conclusion of that particular matter. So we are linking the regularization of the 2.1 billion which has now come down to 95 with the consequential management report. In terms of what we do here and now to end the strike and execution, obviously that engagement with the labor union is intentional. Our view is that we must end the strike because the implementation of the program which we have in place and together with the union, we need the workers on board. So once the workers are coming back on board, we will be able to go out and implement the programs which we have. But over and above that, we are in discussion, and I think the labor movement is also asking us to that to say we have a joint engagement with the labor unions, management, and the board, and everyone else engage our business in order to rebuild the confidence which we have lost, and also to get the business back to the cost of it. On the issue of the CEO, the extended leave which we are talking about is actually to try and protect the cost of it when we talk about it as an extended leave. In other words, it's the same conditions as the suspension. But why we call it special leave is because if we are in crisis, that person must be called to go and deal with something there. If it is a suspension, complete suspension, it means that person will not be called in to do that particular work. But if it's suspension, it's okay. But we are implementing it as an extended leave in order to protect the post office. And again, in terms of management of that process of investigation and ultimately putting we are indeed frustrating that particular aspect because the people we are engaging in, people are talking to us like that, they have gone a long way and we will soon be using the challenge because the investigation has to be intense in terms of making sure that at the end we have the verified results. So it is a shame for us. Thank you.
I want to disagree with you for the suspension, the federal suspended leave and suspension is not the same. Can never be the same. For you, you have worked as an HR specialist. No. The suspension must be suspension. You can't say when the person has done something wrong to the industry, then you're going to call that person to come to the work. To continue to come out or to continue doing the issue. Because if you put someone in an acting position, you must be able to give that person full responsibility to act in a nutshell. That person becomes the CEO. And that person takes full responsibility and accountability. And that's true. So I don't accept it. I don't think it's a board for doing correctly. Either you call it a full suspension, that person must never be called, and you call that person to a GC hearing, and you conclude the matter, either it's on guilty or it's guilty. That's what I don't take it. It's not accepted here. We can go and consult our HR documents, and I've worked in HR, also I can talk about EE forums and all these things. I've worked in that environment. And then the other colleagues were in this session, I disagree. The board has gone correct and make it correct and do what is right. The thing here from, and I'm going to use the minister to speak. So
for me, Jefferson, there's an appearance of reluctance from the boss to act. I don't get the sense that the board is willing to act. The board has to be left here. The question that was asked that is not to be answered. The representative of the union in the board. How long have they been in that board? But not in terms of, we know the law we understand. How long, and these are the things that we're going to do in the way we review legislation. Just to try and protect the institution and toughen up the institution how we operate. In terms of the responsibility for the board, you know, here for me, and just to say, I'm going through on my response. I'm looking at this, the part of the budget review, I just decided to open it 2013. One of the issues that was raised by the Home Minister meeting is in October 2013. A detailed report about the findings, a detailed report about the findings of the internal investigation into the recent support site, an audited outcome on the progress made in the implementation of the 1998 white paper on social services, a turnaround strategy for support within the decline in name volumes, corporatization of post-term government actually coming to an end. This was in October already. And if you go back and look at what they have raised in 2012, as an almost a similar thing. So from Parliament's point of view, any support was appearing here. The matter has been continuously raised. I mean, if you look at the 2011-2012 financial year, that what was due was 2012-2013. 2011-2012 financial year, same thing. SAPO needs to go and look at their cost model. That's what you're saying on the people of the Committee of Parliament and Expressive Funds. So, because that, there was indication that the money is coming to that. And we can't say, Minister, that there's no understanding of the issues that are raised, because some of the board members at the time were there in that court. Because if you look at the current board's composition, some of the members are actually against that. So there's no gap in terms of knowledge, there's no gap in terms of information of the board. That's why I have a problem sitting here listening to the same explanations that the previous committee has had. I don't want to quote, not on me, exactly what is written in this report as I go through. The other issue, SAPO labor employees petition to the speaker. Minister, maybe you are not aware. The petition to the speaker during the financial year 2019, and there was part of the public hearings that were held by portfolio committee on the labor. A lot of issues were raised. SAPO was expected to respond. They responded. And in that process, as well, if you look at the 2013 DRR, I want you guys to go back to your presentation there. Because you have affirmed and confirmed to the committee that you are employing this worker. At the time, there is still not a grant now. Okay, actually if you are to read it, Minister, it was saying they're employed. That's what the presentation says to the committee. I'm writing this thing so that colleagues when are here, you understand what you are raising with the committee. What you are raising is with Parliament. Not with myself, I might not be here today. Tomorrow. But this information is what we keep in our records of Parliament. And anyone has access to those records. That's why you can see a back. Just for which it went into a site of Parliament and put to those reports to see what has been raised with the staff. So that you can understand they are justified in the tone of speech. It's not your first intention with the Parliament on the same letter. I don't know, Minister, if you want to, or we can, if there's anything that was not responded to, so that then we start stepping up and shipping the resource. So I want to speak now, Mr.
Thank you.
Let me
just thank the members and the input. I've been listening very carefully to the input, and including call for action, action to make the call for this web, and call for action for competent management. Maybe let me just start by some of the queries which have not been responded. On the setup process, yes, the setup process will help, but they are not the cause of the current crisis. And you will also remember the other statement that the Exxon Manager it is the same as this government that we give the setup process that the cause of the crisis is not absolutely not accurate. The care team, you know, the distribution of set-up boxes would be a functional IT system. Without functional IT systems in the post office, because we know the people have to go and apply them, and they must be able to communicate with the distributors and then dispatch the boxes to their project outlets and so on. So those are the things where we should look at. Of course, it will end, but not before. All the interaction with businesses, as you said, we are engaging some of the stakeholders of the department and staff. And we are aware of the impact, as all the members have said. The impact is worse on the poor, on the sick, on those who are trying to improve their conditions, like those who bring patent learning, those small businesses which are trying to use male businesses as modern ways of thinking. So we are quite, we are interacting and inviting on us on a daily basis. It's got mental impact, but it's starting to have also international impact. Currently, the people are complaining about the mail system not going through, including diplomats. So but trying our level best to address these issues. And I think I've listened to the members. There is a culture there which needs to be dealt with. Because it's not a new culture, it's happened over a number of years, maybe over 10 years. The culture of being business as usual, the culture of coming with the hands begging, I want the subsidy, I want guarantee. The truth is, even those universal service obligations, they were clearly mitigated when they were introduced. When you give monopoly practices to a company, you must give certain obligations. The South African Post Office was given exclusivity of a letter to the so thereby then there was those universal service obligations. Yes, there's been problems because of the declining mail volumes, there's been problems because of the time frame for delivery, which are the same as in any area. Whereas you may just going and deliver one letter. And the same is that of delivering hundreds of letters. So those are the challenges which should have been clearly mitigated over time, as Matt has said. But there is another problem which we are working with the regulators right now to say they must really look into this. That's why we're talking about strengthening the contract of regulation. Because there is a lot of mail dumping. Have done by the international operations, where they don't actually dump the mail, but they don't dump the revenue to process the mail when it is there. So those are the things we have been working on, and as I said, in the that conversation for our hands or stakeholders and seconds, we measure the rate and we come and make commitments to put special attention to the issues in the product sector. The mere fact that there is an FIA investigation is so 10 years back, it tells you that there's been systemic problems. The control has not been proper. Because if you have proper control, you don't have a chance of a maladministration or corruption or whatever. So that's why we're saying we're hoping that that investigation will also give what is the nature of the systemic problem. But one of the problems which has been raised is this lack of conservative management. People do things, they take too long to be addressed and so on. And then it becomes a culture. Yes. You can do something wrong, nothing will happen, and then when something happens, we give it a golden handshake and peace. So that's a bad temper which we have to really extract from the... just to make a correction on the CEO, from where we stand, and I was just checking the letter I had one because I had to approve the acting position for the current CEO who is to be the acting CEO. We have got the acting CEO with full power from where we stand in the sense of the law. If I correct the Secretary of the Board, the letter didn't talk about the standard. It talked about precautionary suspension. And he gave the reason why it should be out of work, our volunteer goes here. So I thought that we just agreed there. And we did also say that we're hoping for speedy attendance to those issues, because when people just are suspending people for long, it becomes part of the discussion where there's no consequences. But we did also say that they must follow the laws, because it's there for rights. And but it must be still within the framework of the law. The issue we had on the second with all the stakeholders, including the board, management, the unions and other stakeholders, really looked at some of the inefficiencies which are continuing to develop the course of this, including the type of structure, the number of acting positions, too many actors there. And the delegation of power has gone to the regional levels to ensure that operations, those are major operations, operational areas. If then withdraw the powers and take them headquarters, you make the system very totally inefficient. But those are the things that the board must look at as a member of agency. The other one is that which has been raised by a member of the properties. Talking about vacant land, vacant post offices, which have been left to go and rent other offices somewhere. So we said that we should really look into it, and I think there is a classical example of how the move to from Centurion headquarters to Centurion headquarters, which are renting the Centurion headquarters we own, and it's lying vacant right now. But if you correct, if you check motivation around doing that, it was saying we have got cash or so far. This flashing of the strategy as a profit. That was the main motivation, because we have to really go back to that and see what was really happening here. Why did it could be such a beautiful office in town is going to offices in another thing where they are ending? Yes, there were other factors that trying to consolidate all the companies under one roof. But the decision was then taken mainly on the basis of cash, or profit. And, so,
the issue of looking at all these properties and deciding where they can still use them, utilize them, but taking account that they have any legal obligations in terms of current vendors, because we don't want to make things worse than we have. If you have got legal obligations, you can't have damage, because you said that that is the thing before. But I don't believe that we should keep non-strategic vacant properties or vacant land, and maybe we can transfer it to other government departments. Because when you keep these land, you pay rates. When you keep vacant buildings, like court offices, you must keep the light on. You must have the water running. So you continue to pay those things. You just add to the challenges we are facing. As many of us said, it is quite clear from where we see that the cash operating system was more looking at net profit rather than looking at the operational process. Because net profit they are fulfilling, because that's why they are fulfilling the strategy, there's a cost bank, and so on. So it sort of dilutes the impact of what cash you have with the value of business. So those are the things we need to actually focus as we rescue the cost of this. As I said, there were certain procedures which were especially not mentioned subsidiary. I think one of these was CSG. And the rural customer, I think if you see somebody you own only taking that process, why should you sell it? Because what you need is the cost of it. But it was a crazy, it is needed for the supplementary operation. if you look for where CSG comes from, where it comes from, it comes from somewhere, some of those procedures. It was making losses there. And then it was not higher to spread. So we have to look whether our strategic institutions, strategic, make sure that they operate in a proper manner. Because Canada a company which is operating at losses and training the strategic company like the cost of this. The letter of guarantees. The letter requiring the Minister of Finance was that one of guaranteeing that they were authorized to defend the overdraft because of the cash flow from the student the president is changing the what has happened then, there was probably this application from what I understand by the bank of this letter, and that was called the delay. And I think they thought that Mr. Lassen is now the bank that's right that he's paying the cost of this. At the same time, as I said, the minister, when he was speaking on behalf of our government, helping the last week, Mr. O'Connor, he did mention that the state of the company, they need some backing up. And as we back up, we will have to find ways of supporting them, but they must soon stand on their own because of the current financial crisis. It is in that respect they are talking about guarantee, they are asking, and we are still busy considering all those things. In some members, Honorable Chairperson, we have noted, as I said in my introduction, from the government side, we make sure that the offices survive, cost offices survive. And as I said, we are engaging with the board in terms of the laws now, and we will have our meetings with them. But clearly something has to be done in ensuring that there is confidence in the cost of this. One, the
current violence which is associated with this unprecedented strike, really must all call for it to come to an end. If the first officer was made a senior weapon, if you see some of the pictures where female weapons are being stripped in the streets, naked, it's not in our outside protection. That's not what we are supposed to do. We need to appreciate it. We are saying the first officer needs strong leadership and effective management. That's not the best. That will bring confidence to the people of South Africa to be welcome and the business who are working with us. And we must get the court office open again. There are many nations, not just for Indonesia, who are working with other state entities to ensure that the court continues to be solid way to be solid. And I would like to say to those union leaders who committed on the record that really appreciate and must take that seriously. You cannot have salary increase when there's no money given to pay salary. We were very friendly that we were not hiring free. The court office is not broken. If it is allowed to operate, the cash will come in, as usual. But if there is continuous violence and waste of issues, we have instructed the board and the management to stop, but somewhere that we're complaining about inside news, outside the current forum. Because inside news, where you have a bill with a small group and you try to advance it, when you come to the larger masses of workers who have been in work, they see that as reward and chaos. And they repeat the same. So we have to also stop that culture where we are seen to have a private field outside the proper legal workers forum where the employer and the employee can sit down and have proper agreement. And I think I'll stop there for now, Chairperson. We are meeting with the board to hope that in the near future, we have a special shareholders in taking the processes forward and have the lasting solution to the processes. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. I think members, I'm going to say for now, because let me just outline what is going to happen. I think we need a follow-up discussion, Minister. We are in housing on the week of the 24th to 24 hour oversight. November, almost about 2 weeks from now. We'd have to have a follow-up to see what your range has been taken into consideration so that we can do it effectively. But I think one, and on emergency, if you can allow, because I know that members are not going to be here to leave, especially like we have to move it to next time because of the situation in the world. I wish we have had enough time for dealing with the sector. I'm not suffering from the but I want us to sort of, for me, I think the team needs to go back everywhere on what we have read, clearly. But I think what we are going to call upon, we are going to call all the workers to return to work from our side of the community. So it's a failure institution. It's about now failing the institution and failing their just now, more than anything. Secondly, as well as appeal to the unions for teenage years here, let's go back to the negotiation in terms of the next one. Let's not negotiate through media. Let's not negotiate in the street. Let's go back to that forum. Let's start engaging properly there. And call on the board to act on the bridge that has failed to do the work and responsibility. To support the minister in terms of the process that he has started in relation to the board minister, they have also support the and would await the report by Jane. The team must have stood back in counting honestly to finalize the report, to see the report, and the two people are in counting on the side. But we need to set up some time to look at the sources. All I'm appealing now is everybody to change the position, and I think we are 2 minutes, we read up to the minister. The sentiment that you have said, and the evidence that you have presented to the issue, and you know this is an issue that you are inheriting. But I think one of the things is to emphasize the importance of the people who are in this institution to understand. The critical role that this institution is playing an interest in. And why we are not going to be relying on you as a member of the first to be in this position, so that by the time all the things that we have reached, we do not find the same situation when we come back. Thank you very much, members, and the nature has shared.
That sounds good. I need to get some names. Oh, yeah. I need to get some names out. This is Enzo. I'm going to talk to you.